This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Fire and Ice will be held at Castaway Portland, 1900 Northwest 18th Avenue, on Saturday, January 26th. The VIP party begins at 6 p.m. and general admission is at 7. Entertainment includes a performance by two-time Grammy Award winner Matt Albert, and much more. Information about the Q Center Winter Gala can be found at kboo.fm/2013fireandice.
Today on Flashpoints, we have a New Year's special focusing on the 209th anniversary of the independence of the nation of Haiti. Stay tuned, we'll be right back. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. Welcome back. And today is the 209th anniversary of the independence of the nation of Haiti. So I'm going to devote the entire hour today to Haiti and all things Haitian, something that I happen to know a little bit about, having lived there for seven years, from 1999 to 2006, during a very difficult period of that country's history. To begin today, though, I'd like to introduce and bring in a dear friend of mine and a good friend of the show. He's been on often, and that's Ira Kurzban. Ira Kurzban served as the legal counsel for the government of Haiti for over a decade, spanning two administrations, the administration of Jean-Bertrand Aristide and René Garcia Préval. In addition to that, he is also one of the foremost immigration law experts in the country. He's written a book that is widely used by judges and lawyers throughout the United States. So before we get to Haiti, first of all, let me welcome you on to Flashpoints. Welcome to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio, Ira Kurzban.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here, and Happy New Year to you and your listeners.
Happy New Year to you, too. And thank you so much for joining us today. I did this at short notice, so I'm really, really happy that you could join us. Listen, I know that we're going to talk a little bit about Haiti in a bit, but I wanted to start, since you are one of the foremost experts on immigration law in the United States, I want to sort of to get an accounting of you of where immigration reform stands today. It not only affects, of course, Haitians, many Haitians who've been tied up in the legal system for years, many of them who don't know their status, and many of them who can't get out of illegal status or are stuck in limbo, having applied but never having had a hearing date. Of course, that affects immigrants from all over the world. Where do you see immigration reform law today in this country?
Well, I think the election was a defining moment in obtaining comprehensive immigration reform. I think the Republican Party finally woke up and recognized that I think now there has to be immigration reform. Their idea expressed through Romney of self-deportation resulted in the largest Hispanic turnout for a Democratic candidate, I think, ever. Even here in South Florida, which has traditionally been Republican because there are Cubans here, there were polls indicating that Obama won either the majority or close to the majority of Cuban votes, which is absolutely unheard of. I mean, for a presidential candidate like Bill Clinton, for example, I think he got about 20 or 25% of the Cuban vote, in the election when he won Florida. But to win that high a number was just unprecedented, and it's a reflection on the Republican Party's position on immigration. So I think now they have woken up. We have, for the first time, for example, in the last 3 or 4 weeks, political action committee sponsored by conservative Republicans. I began a few years ago something called Immigrants List, the first pro-immigration political action committee. Most political action committees were by conservative Republicans that were anti-immigration. For the first time now, you have people pouring millions of dollars into pro-immigration on the conservative Republican side. So I think it's, you know, clearly a sign that we're going to have comprehensive immigration reform. And when, you know, clients come to my office, I tell them, no,
Flashpoints. We explore the use of torture by the Central Intelligence Agency as portrayed in the recent film Zero Dark Thirty. Next, we focus on the effects of the recent deal made between the Obama administration and Congress to avert what is now famously known as the fiscal cliff. And finally, we return to our coverage of Haiti with news that former President Jean-Bertrand Aristide has been summoned for a hearing tomorrow by the government prosecutor's office. I'm Kevin Pina, filling in for Dennis Bernstein. All of this straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned.
And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. And I'm Kevin Pina, filling in for Dennis Bernstein. And now I want to take on a topic that we've taken on many times before here on this program. And that's the question of what are called enhanced interrogation techniques that we know were used under the Bush administration, or at least we were introduced to the fact that they were being used under the Bush administration in order to extract information that was considered necessary to counter terrorism and to stop attacks upon American citizens and to protect our country. Joining me now via telephone is Glenn Carl. Glenn actually has a lot of experience with the Central Intelligence Agency. He spent 23 years in the clandestine service of the CIA and worked in a number of overseas posts on four continents and in Washington. He also worked on terrorism at various times since the mid-1980s and worked extensively on Balkan, Afghan, Central American, European political security and economic issues. His last position was acting and then deputy national intelligence officer for transnational threats on the National Intelligence Council. He also just recently wrote an article in the Huffington Post. They came out today about portrayal of torture in the new film Zero Dark Thirty. One of his comments was that torture is not necessary, that torture is actually evil, and that that the way in which it was portrayed in that film does not accurately reflect what he believes should be the way in which intelligence services work on our behalf, the American people's behalf, in order to keep us safe. Please welcome Glenn Carl to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. Thank you, sir, for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Well, so why all of a sudden under the Bush administration, why did it even come out to us? I mean, we have heard instances where what was referred to as enhanced techniques, interrogation techniques had been used. We sort of knew the through extraordinary rendition, we sort of presumed that, you know, this was going on. But it really came to the forefront during the Bush administration. Why was that so?
Well, it was a big change in the culture, the practice of American intelligence officers and our policies from our whole history, really. Now, the CIA, of course, is a controversial institution, and many people in the United States and beyond have criticized or condemned it for involvement in any number of activities or programs that are illegal, to include torture in Central America. But the facts really are that the CIA has never been in the business of this kind of activity of torture, or what euphemistically is called enhanced interrogation. We don't do that. And generally speaking, overwhelmingly, the CIA's role has been to uphold our laws, of course, and to stop illegal activities by any sort of surrogate or ally or other party with whom the CIA works. That's generally the case. The exceptions can be found, but that's generally the case. The change came after 9/11 in 2001 with the attacks by the Bush administration. The CIA found itself with, for the first time probably since the Vietnam War, with significant numbers of detainees or prisoners who had been captured by our armed forces or by our special operations officers, and they had potentially information we needed, and that's something that we do want to exploit. So the CIA sought guidance on how can we interrogate these people legally. We won't do anything until we have guidance, and the Office of the Vice President designated, they requested a political appointee in the Justice Department to write a memorandum doing what it wanted to do, which really was to play the tough guy, thinking that by being tough and essentially torturing people, you'd get information. But they didn't know what they were talking about. The advice that they had, or the policies they formulated, were based on advice from two psychologists with no experience in the intelligence business, no experience interrogating, and they didn't know what they were doing. And they
sort of viscerally equated imagined toughness with efficaciousness, and that's not the case. It is impractical. It doesn't work. It makes the job of an interrogator and intelligence officer more difficult, because how do you know what information you obtain is good? You have to always validate it, and it's harder than ever to do that if it's obtained under duress. People will say whatever they need to say to stop the pain. That seems a sort of obvious thing for people to realize, but it's not, apparently. And it also traduces, undermines the lies, and gives the lie to all of our principles. And principles mean something. Our flag should mean something. Our oaths mean something. And we betrayed them all unnecessarily in this.
And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio, and that is the voice of my guest, Glenn Carl, who is a former CIA agent, worked in the clandestine services for more than 23 years. Well, you had stated that that the CIA has not been involved in torture, but wasn't there a famous case that came up in 2007? There was a case of John Kiriakou, who was an ex-CIA analyst from 1998 to 2004, who actually described, was one of the first people